Good morning.
Good morning.
And I will call the Conference Committee on House File 947 to order. And thank you, everyone, for being here on Sunday morning. Welcome, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good to be co-chairing this committee with you. I would like to move Articles 2 through 15
All right.
of the bill before us.
All right. So Senator Nelson moves Articles 2 through 15. And, again, these are the tax articles. And Chair Davids, would you like to make any comments?
Yes. Thank you, Chair Loon. And Senator Nelson, thank you for moving the articles. This is basically the tax bill was passed on a bipartisan basis out of the House. This is the tax bill that I would like to go through with just the changes. And I'd also like to thank my staff committee. I'd like to thank Commissioner Bowerly for all her work on this. And as you know, in the tax committee, the department has the opportunity to testify on every bill and every amendment. And I want to thank Mr. Paul Cummings for the great job he did, always being prepared to express the department's position. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to nonpartisan House Research to explain. There's just six changes that we worked with the department on. Well, actually, five we worked with the department on. And one of the changes was we added a Sandsteed bill to take care of a veteran, 100% disabled veteran, on a property tax issue. So I'll have Mr. Michael go over the other five.
Mr. Michael.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, as Chair Davids indicated, there are five differences from the conference committee for report for House File 4385 that the legislature passed the other day. In Article 4, the sales tax article, there was an exemption for bullion sales that's been deleted. In Article 5, the property tax article, there is the change for the disabled veteran that, Chair Davids just mentioned, as well as there was a provision in the earlier conference committee report that provided special assessment treatment, a class rate reduction for craft houses.
Mr. Michael, I'm sorry. Could you refer to the page numbers that these changes are on? Is that possible?
That would take me a few minutes to look for where the changes
are. Okay, but you did mention the article each change is in.
Yes,
all right.
Right.
Very good. Thank you.
I can find those and list them for you when you're going over the education provisions.
Thank you, Mr. Michael.
Again, in the property tax Article 5, the craft house provision is deleted, so you won't. Some of these things you will not find in the conference committee report because they're not there. That's the main thing that's going on. So, for example, the bullion exemption simply is not there. It was in the earlier report. It's not in this one. That's also true for the craft house provision, the veteran, the disabled veteran exclusion that I can find for you. With regard to Article 6, the public finance article, there is a new section that's added with regard to the Met Council's bonding authority. In 2017, when transit bonding was authorized for the council and expanded, there was a restriction placed on that any bonding that under the council's general authorization could not be used for light rail purposes. What this change does is it just restricts that to the 2017 authorization, not the previous authorizations. In Article 7, the miscellaneous article, there's a provision that allows the Minneapolis local lodging tax to be increased up to the current level of the combination of their statutory authorization plus the general sales tax, which is 13.875%. Finally, in Article 10, the Department of Revenue article, the original bill that was passed had the House language in it. This article now substitutes the Senate language with a couple minor changes that the Department of Revenue recommended. So those are the six changes that are in this conference committee report compared to the one that the legislature passed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Michael. Any questions from the conference committee members for Mr. Michael? All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Michael. And Commissioner, I know that you wanted to testify. Commissioner Bowerly. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning. Madam Chair and members of the Education Committee. Thank you for the opportunity to appear to share with you the governor and our view about the tax provisions in this article. It's my first time in the education world, so I appreciate the welcome.
We are very glad to have you.
Thank you, Chair Loon and Chair Nelson. So the challenge I think that's before the legislature started when the federal law changes happened in December. And at the beginning of session, many people thinking about taxes were talking about how could we reach a path to conformity so that many Minnesotans could have a simpler tax filing system. The governor proposed a revenue-neutral bill for this biennium on tax conformity and provided some additional tax relief for individuals. Unfortunately, as we're nearing, I think, 14 hours left in this session, we still don't see a path to resolving the issues related to the federal bill's response. These articles are the same bill that the governor vetoed. We appreciate that there were some items that the more technical, smaller policy items that we worked with the chairs on yesterday, we appreciate that they have been included. However, the fundamental flaws of the bill that the governor has expressed concern about and the reasons for his veto remain the same. And so I anticipate that this bill will be headed for the same path, unfortunately. The challenges with this bill that the governor has identified is that they phase in rates over time and that sets us on a path for fiscal instability. Fiscal responsibility and stability of the state is one of the governor's signature items and has been committed to, and it's committed to leaving the state in a good financial situation. The tax provisions of this bill are skewed to wealthier individuals versus lower income individuals, individuals who are trying to make their way into the middle class. Under this bill, a family of four earning the state median income of $65,000 would receive a $92 tax cut from the rate cuts. And under the governor's proposal, that same family of four would receive a $240,000 tax cut. Individuals earning $20,000 would receive a $20 tax cut. Individuals earning $150,000 would receive a $262 tax reduction. And so, unfortunately, this bill, like the federal law passed last year, prioritizes tax cuts for corporations over individuals. There is a significant rate cut for the corporate rate. In Minnesota, our corporate rate cut, is 9.7, but our effective tax rate, as determined by Ernst & Young on behalf of cost, is 4.5%. And so I think it's very important that when we consider tax rates in Minnesota, we also consider the significant tax benefits that are available to businesses under our current code. Many of those benefits that our business community thrives on, things like the research and development credit that Chair Nelson has often encouraged us to do more on, the single factor sales. And so there's a number of areas where businesses in Minnesota have opportunities under the tax code. And again, our corporate effective rate is 4.5%. Madam Chair and Chair Nelson and members of the committee, this bill is, I fear, headed for the same fate. And I know my colleague, Commissioner Castillas, will talk more specifically about the education portions. But we do hope that with the time left, we look forward to working with all of you, all the members of the legislature, and everyone who is concerned about the potential lack of conformity with the federal law changes or changes in response to that federal bill, that we have time left in this session to consider an alternative. The governor offered a compromise last night that provided the corporate ATM AMT repeal from the House bill, the rate cut from the Senate bill, and a small portion of working family credit from his bill. Was intended in good faith to be a true compromise that would accommodate all the positions that we've been hearing this session. There may be other paths to a sort of responsible or lights-on sort of approach to conformity, and we would be welcome to talk about those as the day goes on as we move through session. Unfortunately, this bill is not that path, but we look forward to working with you that to enact a proposal that can lead to a successful end of session that the governor can sign. Thank you for the time, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions for Commissioner Bowerly? And Chair Davis, did you wish to comment?
Yes, thank you. First of all, I need to correct the commissioner on a few major points. First of all, there are no tax cuts for corporations in this bill. Corporations will pay more under this bill. That is not true. There are no tax cuts for corporations. Was that clear? No tax cuts for corporations, number one. Number two, this bill is fiscally responsible. Governor Dayton's compromise bill that was thrown together yesterday would raise regressive taxes on the poor. That's what that bill does. I am not here to raise taxes on the poor. Now, maybe the governor is. I'm not. So just remember, no tax cuts on the corporations. The governor's plan is extremely regressive, and members, vote for this bill because it is a masterpiece.
Thank you, Chair Davids. Any other comments or questions from members of the committee? Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just want to concur with Representative Davids on this. I had the opportunity to sit on the tax committee this year and the tax conference committee. And, you know, the commissioner claims that this prioritizes corporate tax cuts or tax cuts for the corporate and the wealthy, and it's just not true. It's just not true. This is a bill that holds over 99% of Minnesota families harmless. They won't pay any additional state taxes. In fact, Chair Davis, correct me if I'm wrong, 85% actually do see a tax cut. Now, we can quibble about the nominal amount, but on a rate basis, everybody's treated the same. And we are proposing that we lower the two bottom tax rates in this bill. Now, the one thing and as Chair David said, the governor's proposal raises taxes on every Minnesotan. The other thing I would say is that, and something that I am uncomfortable with in this bill, is that we do a slight tax increase to the corporate world by taxing money that's not being repatriated, but we deem to be repatriated. While we're allowed to under the federal statute, it's something I'm uncomfortable with, but I would agree with Chair Davids. I think this is a good tax bill. It's a good tax bill for Minnesota families, and we should be passing it on a bipartisan basis. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Pratt. Representative Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just quick comments. Again, thank you, Chair Davids, on your work in the Tax Committee. This came off the House floor with a good bipartisan vote. And I echo everything that Senator Pratt would say. And I just want to comment and say that and remind people that around here you can't legislate by rhetoric. And you can say we have lots of time, but you can't then come back to us, push us in a corner, and say you need to be open and transparent. I would say to the governor, we have been that way. We have put many, many good proposals, and there's a lot of hard work. And I suspect this will come off the House floor with a good vote again. And if the governor wants to take us down a veto path, I think that's a November question.
Senator Weaker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Kreisha, perhaps you're correct that this will have to be a path taken to the voters in November. Representative Davids, I know how hard you've worked on this. There's a lot of people that wouldn't characterize this as a masterpiece. I would say it's a work in progress, as the commissioner indicated. Some technical incremental changes have been made. But the executive branch has a role in coming to a resolution of this. Mention was made in the House that there was bipartisan support. Acknowledge there were a half a dozen or so votes, maybe a couple of votes in the Senate by the minority party. We stand with our governor, and First and foremost, I believe it provides fiscal instability, and that's one of the things that Governor Dayton has addressed during his two terms is to get the ship right. This has huge consequences in terms of future legislatures, and we need to continue on the path for fiscal stability, fiscal responsibility, and if we have the message that it's going to be vetoed and we have 13 hours left, I urge you to continue the negotiation. Otherwise, as Representative Creech just said, the voters will decide.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I, too, served on the conference committee and would have to say that in respect to Chair Davids, he hears every bill that comes before him. It is a very bipartisan committee, and the hearings and the input that comes is valued and was placed in this proposal that stands with the people. Madam Chair and Co-Chair Nelson, this is an excellent proposal, and we need to move forward with it, considering that we also are going to move to another section of the bill shortly, which is very, very important to the children of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Any further comments? And I do see that Senator Chamberlain, the chair of the Senate Tax Committee, is here. And I would invite you to come down, Chair Chamberlain, if you'd like to make a few comments.
Good morning. Thanks for allowing me this time. And it's sincerely unfortunate that the governor has already said that he will, again, veto this bill. This bill has been a compromise with the governor and with the commissioner. We have given the governor tax increases, among other things, in this bill. For Senator Wieger to say that it's a work in progress and fiscally unstable is borderline ludicrous. It's ludicrous. They have talked about the next biennium, that this bill would blow up the 23 tails. That number is fiction. What we're talking about here is getting something done for the folks of this state and to stop the political games and stunts. And this is a political game and a stunt. This is a skinny and as beneficial to the citizens of this state as you can get. And they have not been very helpful in coming to a conclusion and negotiating through this process. So it is unfortunate the governor is holding the people hostage again with this this gamesmanship. It's a tiresome, weary process. 2.6 million filers in this state will be really disappointed. I came in at the end of somebody's comments, and they were talking about the voters in November. Perhaps the people do have to decide that they want to end this nonsense. This is pure and utter foolishness. And we have to stop playing the game. So thank you for the time. The bill is as good and skinny as it can get. Compromise with the governor. It holds 99.8% of the people harmless. 82% of the people get some savings. 70% of those folks are under 80,000 AGI. It's got some good policy. So, sadly, they have said ahead of time to destroy that one as well. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chair Chamberlain. Chair Davids.
Well, and thank you, and it's been an honor to serve with Chair Chamberlain. I'd have to disagree with one thing he said. He said it's skinny. I don't think it's that skinny. but just so members know, and I'm hoping that this gets signed. I think it gets signed because I think Article 1 will help it get signed. That being said, there are no so-called poison pills in this bill because what Senator Chamberlain and I did is we went through the whole bill, and the question that we asked ourselves was, is this something the governor could not support? And we took all of those items out. This bill goes from federal taxable income, FTI, to AGI. This has Section 179. This gets rid of the EMT. You go on and on and on what this bill does. So when the department sits here and says that this bill isn't good or isn't right, that is nonsense. We pulled the MNsure language out. It's not in this bill. We pulled the estate tax language, which is very important, to Senator Chamberlain and myself, out. We pulled the Quill decision out. We pulled the income tax triggers. They're out. So to somehow say this bill is a work in progress is complete nonsense. It's complete nonsense. This bill has been worked on the last, well, I started working on this December 23rd because the of 17 because December 22nd was President Trump signed the bill, which is a good bill, but for a high-tax state like Minnesota, we had some challenges. This bill does what needs to be done. And if we are going to put the people of Minnesota at risk, so that if this bill gets vetoed, the department is going to have a heck of a time administering the tax code. This is a responsible bill. This is a good bill for Minnesota. And I think with Article 1, we can get this signed.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Senator Wicker?
Yes, thank you, Madam President. To Representative Davidson and Senator Chamberlain, if I was at Mass right now where I should be, I would say peace be with you.
And also with you.
Yeah.
Good Lutheran response. Okay. Senator Nelson?
Just a couple comments on the tax bill. I see the tax chairs are walking away, but they don't need to respond if they choose not to. But I would, you know, as a former tax committee member and as a taxpayer, like everyone in this room and most Minnesotans, this tax bill is very important to us. The fact that 99%, how many things in life do we get 99%? 99% of Minnesotans will not see any tax hikes. That's pretty important. But most importantly, how often do we get to the 85% level? We don't get that in legislation very often. But here, in the bill before us today, 85% of Minnesotans are going to receive tax cuts. And you would think, well, what's wrong with that? Well, I did hear my esteemed colleague talk about the fact that a concern that this is unsustainable, and it might be unsustainable in years down the road for future legislatures. Well, my friends, that's what we have future legislatures for. We cannot set a bill here today that is going to take into account all the things that happen in the next 5 years or 10 years. That's what our job is. And so to say that we're not going to, that this tax bill that gives tax reductions to 85% of Minnesotans should not be signed because we're not sure what the future is going to hold, I don't find that as a credible argument, because that is what the next legislature's job is to do, is to look at the financial stability of our state and our tax and spending together. So I'm very disappointed to even consider the thought. I think Minnesotans should be trembling to even hear the thought that this tax bill might be vetoed. The consequences are great. As Chair David said, we're already one of the highest tax states in the nation in many categories. So I think this is problematic. Just my closing comments would be that if, in fact, we do not get this tax bill, this much-needed simplicity, tax conformity, and then right-sizing our taxes, I think that the debacles that we've seen with MNLARS and MNsure, and now we're finding with our child care assistance program, those will look like a walk in the park. So I'm encouraging strong support for this tax bill, knowing that the next legislature, the next duly elected legislature and governor, will be setting the future budgets, which are based upon taxes and spending.
All right. Thank you, Senator Nelson. And I just want to offer my personal thanks to Chair Davids and Chair Chamberlain for all of their hard work on this and the compromises and concessions you have made in hopes of gaining the governor's support. I think it certainly is merited. And again, I want to congratulate you on a really good tax bill. Look forward to voting for it soon before the end of this legislative session. And with that, Senator Nelson renews her motion to adopt Articles 2 through 15. Any discussion? If not, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Right. Motion is approved. Thank you, Senator Nelson. The articles are adopted. Excuse me. And so now we are going to move on to Article 1. I'm sorry, Chair Davis, do you want to say something?
No, just thank you, Chair Dillon. Thank you, Chair Nelson.
All right, I'm sorry. Thank you very much, and thank you to both you and Senator Chamberlain for being here. Much appreciated.
So, Madam Chair, I would like to move Article 1. This is the education article, and we will move Article 1, and then we'll talk.
All right, very good. So Senator Nelson moves Article 1, and I know Commissioner Caselius wanted to testify. All right, so Commissioner, while you're coming down, we do have a minor technical amendment, and we were going to have nonpartisan explain this. I'm sorry. I jumped the gun just a little bit here. So why don't we have nonpartisan describe the provisions in Article 1, and then we'll move on to the rest of that process.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mr. Strom.
Members, Article 1 is found on pages 1 to 4 of the bill. There are four sections in this article relating to K-12 education. Let me briefly describe those sections. Section 1 is technical and corrects the state budget reserve amount to reflect the current amounts in that account. As members are aware, when the November forecast shows a surplus, a portion of that is moved into the budget reserve account on the top of page 2. On line 2, where you see the existing amount struck and the $1,608,000,000 put in its place, that's updating the amount to the current amount. And then the language that's stricken, clause 5 on lines 10 and 11, and the corresponding language on lines 21 and 22 take care of a provision that was already removed and funded. Madam Chair, the next three changes are all substantive changes in the K-12 world. The first of those is in Section 2 and has to do with staff development revenue. As education members are aware, in the K-12 world, some sources of revenue are reserved for particular purposes. One of those reserves is in current law for staff development revenue. This revenue is used for things like teacher evaluation, staff development, all sorts of activities related to teacher training. And there's a requirement in statute that 2% of that of the basic formula allowance be reserved for these purposes unless a couple of characteristics exist. One of those is if the district is in statutory operating debt, or second, if the district and its bargaining unit decide to spend the money differently, they can do so through mutual adoption of a resolution. The new language that's added would allow a school district for fiscal year 2019 only to adopt a written resolution after a hearing on the issue to waive the 2% reserve. Section 3 is the appropriations language with the new money for school districts. Essentially what's happening is $50 million is being transferred from the budget reserve to the general fund, and then that same $50 million is appropriated from the general fund to the Commissioner of Education for student and school safety aid. The amount that is appropriated is a per pupil amount based on the number of adjusted pupils, the unweighted count, and using the previous year's amount. This adjustment of $57.73 per pupil would go out in the September payment of permanent school fund money. And you'll see in Subdivision 2 that it refers to the reference in statute in Section 84.027, Subdivision 18, where there are a variety of tasks and reports required as the DNR and the works to realign permanent school fund lands that are located within state management areas. The uses of the money for the student and school safety aid are to be consistent with those purposes listed in the Safe Schools Revenue section of law, which is section 126C.44, or if the board otherwise deems an alternative use. Finally, Madam Chair, the last provision, the fourth section in the K-12 article, has to do with the Community Service Fund. As education members are aware, school districts are required to keep their community service revenue in a separate fund called Fund 4. Within that fund are programs like ECFE and school readiness. There's also a basic community education account in that fund, and the statute requires school districts reserve that money and use that only for general community service purposes. The provision in statute would allow school districts to transfer money either on June 30th, 2018 or June 30th, 2019 if the district has a surplus in that fund to transfer that money to the general fund for spending as determined by the school board. There are two restrictions on this transfer. The first of those is that the district, when making the transfer, must abide to the extent practical by its policy regarding fund balances. And secondly, a district wishing to make such a transfer needs to apply to the Commissioner of Education in order to make that transfer. So, Madam Chair, in a nutshell, those are the K-12 provisions in Article 1 of this Conference Committee report.
Thank you, Mr. Strom. Any questions from the Conference Committee members about those provisions? Representative Fischer.
Just clarification, Mr. Strom, with the addition of this $50 million, what would be the total education allocation for the biennium last year plus this year? Do you know that number off?
Madam Chair, or Representative Crescia, Ms. Adrians is pulling that number up as we speak.
Ms. Adrians.
Madam Chair and members, Representative Crescia, thank you for the question. Give me one more minute and let me check. I don't have the February forecast numbers on this, so I will get back to you with that number.
We'll come back to that. Ms. Adrians will get that number for us. Any other questions? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Strom, when we were talking about this in committee, the community education reserve fund balance, I had the understanding that there were just like four school districts, or we talked about four school districts, Minnetonka, Minneapolis, Ivanhoe, and Hopkins, that had a surplus in their funding. But this sounds, under Section 4, it sounds like there's a lot more than those four. So do all school districts then have more money in their community education fund? Are they going to be allowed to apply to the commissioner then to get permission to use this money for their general fund activities? And is this, did you say it was just one time or it's ongoing?
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, yes, you're correct. The initial bill that left the House this year, House File 4328, had the four districts that requested specific transfers in it. This provision in the proposed Conference Committee report for House File 947 would allow any district that has a surplus to make a transfer. Many districts have a surplus. Roughly $50 million or so are in those fund balance accounts across school districts. It's not clear to me how many of those districts would ask for a transfer, but roughly $50 million of fund balance existed as of June 30th, 2017. In terms of the question, ongoing, thank you, Representative Erickson. The provision in the bill allows a transfer on 2 days as of June 30th, 2018 or June 30th, 2019, but the purpose of that is essentially for a one-time transfer that could happen if the board could act quickly enough to do it by 2018. Otherwise, at the end of the year, after they spent that money, essentially in principle, they could make that transfer. But generally, when the legislature authorizes fund transfers, those are on a date specific at the close of the fiscal year for the school districts, which is June 30th of the year. So it's a two-time opportunity for a one-time transfer, essentially.
Right. And, okay. And Mr. Strom, just to clarify as well, the commissioner would also have to approve of this request for fund balance transfer.
Madam Chair, yes.
And just to add to that, Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
To that discussion, it's important that members might know or recall that we had one of these fund transfers in our conference committee earlier this year, but the governor specifically requested that if one school district is able to make those fund transfers as originally in the House bill, that they all be included, whether or not there had been hearings or not. So this is in line with what the governor had requested in regards to if we're going to allow one school district to make a fund transfer, then we should allow all school districts to make that fund transfer. But remember, it's only if they choose to and if the commissioner approves.
Representative Murphy.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm so happy that we're now concerned about how the governor feels. But 5 minutes ago, we didn't quite touch on that good feeling about what the governor is recommending. I had concerns about this at the very beginning to open this door, and there were the four, and I went for it, but I didn't think that within a week the door would be opened again for all districts across the state. And I just think that possibly school districts are going to be able to have a lot more now. And those that don't have, the communities that have a school with not a lot of community education programming and opportunities to run programs at the going rates of the four examples that we used at that time, that's going to make the difference between those the haves and the have-nots much greater, and we should seriously think about that as we're thinking about our districts, and they might be asking us if they should apply for this one-time deal. But we should give this grave thought over the summer and the interim to see if we want to continue this precedent that we're opening the door for on this day. And I think that the governor is right in saying that something that should be good for all school districts if it's helpful to one. But we're going to have to think about how we can make up that difference in equity across the states in a lot more than just community education fund.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. And, you know, I know there is some differences of opinion on this, and I think in particular the folks representing community education have expressed some concerns about this. But, you know, I would note that, you know, we had a specific bill that was heard in education committee, as you recall, from Minnetonka and then that went through the process, kind of the regular process. Others came forward as sort of another Me Too movement on this issue. But I would note that Representative Dabney, Lee, and Pryor introduced legislation just this week, House File 4532, which is identical language to the language in this article that we're talking about. So I would indicate that there is bipartisan support for this flexibility. There are some schools that are experiencing I would say some extreme budget difficulties right now that have a very healthy fund balance in their community education fund. So Again, I think just in terms of looking at all of the options out there and with the sort of permissive nature of it in terms of bringing in the Commissioner of Education to sort of review perhaps the consequences of a transfer request, there's some good sort of safeguards on this as well. Senator Pratt. Miss Adrians has our number. So, and again, Representative Crecia, you were asking what the total education funding would be with the additional funds in this proposal.
Madam Chair and Representative Crecia, members, thank you for your patience. The numbers from the February forecast give us a base amount in fiscal year 19 for all of the education spending in our area of just over $9.5 billion. And so with the additional $50 million in this language, that would provide for $9.61 billion in fiscal year 19. And then we wouldn't use a specific number for the other provisions because they would need to be board approved, but it could go upwards of $9.7 billion with community fund transfers and using some of that 2% set aside for districts.
So, Ms. Adrians, just to be clear about that, so it would be more about at least $100 million or more with the flexibility for the school districts.
Madam Chair, members, there's the potential for that, definitely.
All right. Thank you. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make a comment about the reserves at Community Ed. I think in part they're due to very aggressive and active community education programs for which parents pay a fee, and the fee then accumulates, and so this would be a giving back to the community that has participated in Community Ed. I think the people would appreciate that.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Senator Wieger?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we going to hear from the Commissioner?
We are. I just wanted to make sure everyone was clear or had questions on the proposal as described by nonpartisan.
I have some comments, but I'll wait. Too.
Okay.
Madam Chair, for the record, I think it's important, if it's not been stated already, what that cumulative balance is statewide in community ed. Does the staff have that? I think it's about $50 million.
Ms. Adrians.
Madam Chair and Chair Nelson, yes, my numbers are about $52
million. Yes. Thank you. All right, with that, sorry, Commissioner, please come on up if you want to come to the testifier table. And welcome, Commissioner Casalius. Very glad to have you with us this morning.
Madam Chair, Chair Nelson, thank you for having me here today, Brenda Casalius, Commissioner of Education and committee members. I want to thank you for allowing me to testify and for your continued efforts to try to find compromise with the governor on school funding. Our kids absolutely need it, as well as our teachers and schools. The other night, Madam Chair, after our conference committee, I was feeling kind of hopeful when I bumped into you and the speaker and was told that you were working on an education proposal for the governor. However, after seeing the proposal yesterday, I'm beyond disappointed, as you can expect. I thought we were going to get a serious proposal, one with new money, but instead what the governor received was a proposal that was mostly allow schools to spend money they already have, a proposal that said that they were getting $225 million more, when really they were only getting $50 million more out of the reserve. This proposal is full of transfers and shifts, and most importantly, takes monies from teachers' development after we just passed tiered licensure, which will allow teachers to get a position in our schools with no preparation. When we know teachers are going to need more training around school safety, when we know teachers are going to need more training around the achievement gap, helping students who don't yet speak English, when we know that they're going to need help implementing the new ESSA requirements, why would we take this money away from our teachers? Madam Chair, I just don't understand, with the $329 million surplus, how we couldn't find some real money for our kids. I don't understand why we didn't fund special ed as an approach if we needed a new approach, and the underfunding of that, or why you didn't come with a proposal to fund other ways to target the funding. You've said so many times we should target the funding and put the funding out to schools, but this proposal takes $50 million out of our state reserve, gives 57.73 cents per student to everybody. It's not on the formula, which targets to our poorest kids. So the money's not going out to our poorest kids or our poorest school districts. Madam Chair, you've argued for this funding, and I'm surprised that the approach is not here, that it's not targeted to our poorest kids. There are so many ways we could still get more funding to our schools that don't involve raiding the reserves, transfers, taking money from our teachers, shifts. If this body's interested, I'm still hopeful that we can still find some way in these last hours to find money to get to our schools and make this bill better so that kids can get the safety improvements that they need, that teachers can have the support that they deserve, and that school districts won't be faced with closing schools, laying off teachers, or raising class sizes. You heard Commissioner Bowerly here talking about the problems with the tax bill. The governor has been clear, unless those matters are resolved, he will not sign an education bill. So I'm troubled that these two bills are put together. I'm hoping that maybe we can figure out a way forward, Madam Chair. I want to just clear up one thing about the governor's position on the community ed that was discussed earlier. He didn't say all school districts should have the community ed flexibility. In his proposal, we talked about the ones, because Minnetonka was giving it, that the others should be able to get it because they came and asked. And then, Madam Chair, you were the one who said we should have a deeper conversation about these, the larger flexibility because of the community ed concerns and that were raised. And so you took it out and gave it just to Minnetonka because of those concerns, but then there were others who came forward, so it ended back in, and then it was out. And so we put it in just as an equity measure for those who had asked. And then I think it deserves a bigger conversation. And to have commissioner approval for those community, I mean, I don't know how many approvals are going to come through our office with no admin funds to manage all of those approvals. That could be quite challenging for the department. So I just wanted to raise those concerns. And I guess I'll leave it at that. But I am hopeful maybe we can figure something else out.
Thank you, Commissioner. Questions or comments for the Commissioner? Senator Wieger.
Madam Chair and members, it's a comment in support of what Commissioner Casselius has said. This article is being branded as new money, $200 million or more. The truth is, just a small portion coming from the school permanent school trust fund of the $50 million would be money that hasn't already been incorporated into what school districts have. This is primarily a shell game or a transfer of money, or as Commissioner and some others have said, it's a gimmick. Let's provide new money if we're saying we're doing that. I appreciate reaching out for additional safe school revenue, for additional emergency aid, as the governor has called for. He's asked for a straight-up bill addressing that on a single subject. If that can't be done, though it could on safe schools, let's go to the surplus to get this and not put districts in a position where they have to trade on training and development, the set-aside 2%. Do you know how upsetting that has to be to teachers? This is their training and development money. We're going to take that away potentially. That's the wrong signal, where we want the best, the brightest, and all of the challenges. And to say this is a set aside that could be rated. The community ed fund transfer, I appreciate that Commissioner Casselli has clarified the record. Each school district has a community ed board, and as an intern at the legislature way, way back when I worked for Senator Hughes, I wrote for him the first community ed bill. And a key part of that, and then for all the districts that have rolled this out, was to have a community ed board that would put together a program with the community. And there's partnerships, and people that serve on this do this as volunteers and putting together a number of programs. And to suddenly say this could be rated, under what criteria? The commissioner, without money or a standard as to what's right or wrong, it could just be rated. Provide for the integrity of the community ed program. The Val Doslin has submitted info. They strongly oppose this. I'm a member of this conference committee. It's the first time we've met, and obviously this is the first time I've seen the proposal. It was, you know, 2 a.m., but it's wrong to raid community ed funds or to say this is new money. These community ed leaders in our district have worked very hard in this lifelong learning model, and it should not be used as a cookie jar for the school board for funds for an undetermined purpose. So I appreciate that there's attempts to provide additional money, but it's there in the surplus. Let's get it there.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. And I just wanted to have staff go over this again because you made a reference to a rating of the permanent school trust fund, which is absolutely not the case. There is no money coming from the permanent school trust fund as part of this proposal. The money is coming from the budget reserves, but it is going to schools as sort of a reparations payment, if you will, for monies owed to the beneficiaries, the school children, for activities on school trust lands that should be generating income to the fund but is not being paid. So whenever someone does recreation on school trust lands, whether maybe you launch your boat from a public boat landing that's been placed on them, you go hunting or fishing on state trust lands, there are fees paid through licenses to the DNR for that, but none of that money is being transferred to the kids, to the trust fund. And we've got studies from the DNR, valuations of those losses, and frankly, this $50 million from the reserves is a partial payment for those losses over the years, which have been, again, identified and documented by the DNR, by this administration. So just to make clear about this process, I don't want there to be any misunderstanding that there's any money coming from the permanent school trust, because that is absolutely not the case. And I would just ask nonpartisan to confirm what I'm saying so everyone can be very clear about that.
Madam Chair, members, that is correct. The transfer of $50 million comes from the budget reserve to the general fund. $50 million is then appropriated from the general fund to the Commissioner of Education, and those payments of the $57.73 are added to the September allotment allocation that goes to school districts for the fall payment of the permanent school fund plus this additional money.
Thank you, Mr. Shaw. Right. Senator Wieger.
Yes, and thank you, Madam Chair, for pointing out about the Permanent School Trust Fund. I was the author of legislation that created the commission. I remember Grace Kelleher and a number of us that were up in northern Minnesota touring the various parcels where this revenue was generated. And I just wasn't aware of the proposal as it came before us right now. I haven't been on this conference committee where we've discussed it. Apparently, Senator Pratt told me that perhaps there was a message from some member of the commission or the director talking about the availability. So I'm just learning about that window of opportunity. I would seize the moment if they have signed off on it, because I do believe strongly that revenue generated, from the trust lands, or if there's a question regarding DNR management fee, that it does need to be addressed, and ultimately beneficiaries are the students. So I want to, I do know about the background on this issue, but I just didn't get copies of what had been communicated as this opportunity right now.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. And yes, Director Aaron Vandeland of the School Trust has been consulted, has offered guidance and support and documentation of these this sort of reparations that should be provided. And so, again, that has all been done, in working cooperatively. And honestly, as in the legislature, we are all really trustees of these school trusts. And so not to put this all on the DNR, but this is a responsibility we have to the school children of Minnesota as part of our responsibilities in managing this trust. And this has been a long-standing issue and something the legislature has been grappling with. I mean, the legislation that you referenced was passed in 2012, and trying to get our arms around how we finally make sure that this trust is managed appropriately and generating the type of revenue that it should be for our schools and for our school children.
And Madam
Senator Nelson.
Yes, and just to add some clarity to that, particularly for the senators, this was a House provision, a House idea early on, and quite frankly, I had some trepidation about it myself at first. But as we found more information, but most importantly, it's important that the record adequately reflects here that what we are doing today actually is helpful to our students, because for the first time, it acknowledges that there is this fiduciary responsibility, as you have said, to actually make sure that those school trust lands are in fact being used to the best possible use as far as providing funds for our school children, which is what they are dedicated to do. We have never done that. We have never yet made any kind of payment in lieu of school trust lands that were not used properly or that were not used to the highest and most maximum best use. And what we have before us today, while the additional, and let's say, $50 million is new money. I wouldn't call that a shell game. That's straight up new money out of the reserves. But we are also accounting that. It's an accounting mechanism that this legislation is actually accounting, knowing that that is counted towards the balance due to our students because school trust lands are not being managed to maximize that return. So it is if we support school trust lands, which I believe we all do because they are an important aspect of our children, it's our heritage, and we want to make sure that that's adequate, that those trust lands are used to maximize benefit to our school students. This is a step that does that. It is not anything other than acknowledging the fact that those school trust lands produce income for our students, and they should be managed in a way to maximize that. And if they're not, we have the fiduciary responsibility to make up that difference. And this is the first payment. This is the first step in acknowledging that $50 million is accredited towards that balance due to our kids.
Senator Rieger.
Thank you, Madam President. Thank you, Senator Nelson. And actually, the roots of this are in our Minnesota Constitution, and maybe there's still some thoughts for some constitutional upgrade on that.
Thank you, Senator Rieger. And I think, just to echo very quickly what Senator Nelson alluded to, this is not a completion with this $50 million of sort of writing, where we are, which is really in arrears to funds to the permanent school trust and that. But it is, sort of a catch-up payment, a partial catch-up payment, but this is something the legislature really needs to continue working on. And I would certainly intend, and I would imagine, Senator Nelson, we would intend to be holding some hearings on this topic about where we go from here, because there does need to be a more comprehensive plan to kind of continue pushing along the efforts to, better manage the trust land, the permanent school trust, and make sure that we are maximizing the return on those investments for the children of Minnesota. Commissioner, did you have a question? And I was trying to kind of get to your question, I think, which was this one-time or ongoing, I think was what I...
Yeah, Madam Chair, you know, obviously we charge fees for a number of things, and a lot of that falls to the bottom line, and sometimes the DNR is using this to manage our trust lands, or I'm just not certain how the impacts are going to be for the future of our trust lands with these transfers, and so I don't know if that's been looked at, and so that's why I was asking if it's ongoing. Is this going to be a yearly $50 million to our schools? So I want a clarification on that. If you would, let me clarify one other thing for the record. I forgot to mention on the 2% blink on and blink off. I know over the years this has been blinked on and blinked off, the 2%. But the speaker yesterday, I think you noted in your email to us, mentioned that in 13 and 14 that the Democrats had used that and blinked it off, and they did not, in fact, do that. And I just want to make sure that that's clear for the record.
All right, well, let me ask nonpartisan on that. It's my understanding that the 2% set aside, sort of linking off that requirement or giving schools flexibility, has been done a number of times in the past, and I think it was 2010 through 13 that flexibility was authorized. Could you clarify, Mr. Strom?
Madam Chair, members, there are three changes in the last 10 years with the staff development revenue. The 2009 and 2011 legislatures both passed a two-year waiver of the 2% set-aside. And the 2012 legislature also changed the uses of the staff development revenue and the set-aside that at that time the statute laid out a three-part process for allocating that money. So there were those three changes. There was an earlier change that applied to the mid-2000s as well. But for the last 10 years, there were those three changes regarding the flexibility of the staff development revenue in legislative years 2009, 2011, and 2012.
All right. So the ones made in 2011 and 12 obviously would have been signed into law by Governor Dayton, correct?
Madam Chair, I think that's right.
Okay.
I get those years mixed up, but I believe that's
all right. Counting back, I think that would be correct. Commissioner.
Specifically, the comment was that when the Democrats were in full control, that in 13 and 14, that it was blinked off, and I just wanted to clear up that record. I understand that the governor does have to sign things that he doesn't agree with. He signs things, and he says that often. In 11 and 12, when it was Republican control, but I just wanted to clarify that for the record, and I thank you for letting me do that.
All right. Thank you very much, Commissioner. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just to one of the comments that the Commissioner made that I'd like to clarify, she asked if this was going to be an ongoing $50 million appropriation. Isn't there a statute on the books that the DNR is actually supposed to be coming to us with the plan by July 1? And if Mr. Strom or one of the staff could clarify us on on the ongoing plan for paying back our school trust land students.
Yes, thank you, Senator Pratt. Good question. Mr. Strong.
Madam Chair, yes, the current statute governing this is in Minnesota Statutes Chapter 84 in Section 84.027. Part of the subdivision speaks to two activities that occur with July 1st, 2018 as the date of action. We'd be glad to go print that page for members real quick if that's helpful so that they can see the different activities that both the DNR and the reporting should be doing by July 1st, 2018.
Senator Pratt.
Mr. Strom, I don't think that's necessary. I think the piece that I wanted to at least say is that there's an expectation that DNR is going to be coming to us, and so this isn't intended for the legislature to be jumping over the DNR and their long-term responsibility, but to at least provide some immediate funds for a debt that we know is existing.
Thank you, Senator Pratt. Any questions? Senator Nelson.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a few comments, then we do have one technical amendment to add, and that is that, yes, it is one-time funding from the reserves, just to be very clear about that, and also so that the record is very clear, there is new money here combined with flexibility. And in regards to the staff development changes over the years, sometimes those changes have been just who determines how that staff development money is spent, whether it's at the building level or the district level. And so the staff development flexibility that is in this bill is not all too different from that. It just allows the individual school districts to determine how to spend that funding. And it very well might be staff development, or some school districts might have different needs. And that's one thing I've noticed as I've traveled across the state, not just looking at our schools, but as a member of the bonding committee as well. It takes you all across the state. And there's one thing that's very, very clear. Just as our students are so incredibly different, so are the schools to which they attend. And their needs are very different. And that's why it's so important that we offer as much flexibility to our schools in every way that we possibly can and still get the results that are so needed. And that's, this is just a small piece that does that. And particularly with the school safety dollars that we are including here, let's make it very clear that the school districts determine how best to use those dollars as well to keep their children safe regarding safe schools. So with that, Madam Chair, I do have one technical amendment to offer, and that is the A18-1043.
All right.
And we can have a staff just go over those technical changes.
Yes.
I want to close it.
Okay. So Senator Nelson offers the
Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. 18-1043 amendment, and I believe that has been passed out to, has that been passed out?
Yes.
It has been passed out. Mr. Arneson, do you have it?
No.
Okay, very good. Mr. Arneson, if you would speak to the amendment.
Madam Chair, the amendment, I think, would clarify the committee's intent on how this aid is to be distributed. As Mr. Strom described, in September of this year, there will be an apportionment from the permanent school fund. And to clarify that this language would not require that apportionment from that fund to be increased, but rather that the aid under this proposal would be distributed concurrent with that apportionment. The new language here I think clarifies that intent, and as I understand it, is consistent with the committee's intent for this student and school safety aid.
Thank you, Mr. Arneson. And when you say concurrent, in addition to the usual payment from the school trust?
Madam Chair, yes, and distributed at the same time.
All right. Very good. Thank you. So I think that is a good technical clarifying amendment. Any questions or comments to the amendment? If not, all in favor of the A18-1043 amendment, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right. The amendment is adopted into Article 1. And so now the question is on Article 1 as amended. So Senator Nelson renews her motion.
I renew.
All right.
Motion that we pass Article 1 as amended.
All right. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
All right. And so Article 1 as amended is adopted. All right. So any closing comments? I know Senator Pratt, you wanted to make one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I just wanted to maybe address some of the comments made by the commissioner. Suggesting this is not a serious proposal. This is an extremely serious proposal. The governor never came out and said that we were supposed to be funding the formula in our lowest income students. He said there were 59 school districts out there that were facing budget shortfalls and we needed to help them out. And this is a proposal that allows school districts to have that flexibility, those that are in the greatest need, a budget shortfall, to be able to do that. Now, I know you all get tired of me talking about the time when I was on the school board, but I was on the school board. And
how many years, Senator Pratt?
Less than Representative Grunhagen.
All right. Just had to get that on the record.
And the 2% increase for each year on the formula was the most that has been provided to schools in the last 12 years. That's a fact. When we were facing $1 million deficit, we appreciated this type of flexibility to help us manage our cash flow and get through the tough times.
This is targeted to those 59 school districts that have the need. And I think that's important to say that the governor wanted to help districts that were facing budgetary shortfalls, and that's what we've provided. Commissioner, this is a very serious proposal. $50 million in additional school safety money is a serious proposal. And had we not provided that 2%, had we not provided that 2% each year, we'd have more districts facing budget shortfalls right now. And so, members, this is a good bill, and it should, I said it earlier and I'll say it again, it should garner bipartisan support. I think it was mentioned that, and I'll go back in the years, but I recall even prior to the years that Mr. Strom said, we were provided this flexibility over time, and we utilized it to get through those shortfalls when Senator Wieger was in the majority. So, members, let's not call this gimmicks. Let's not call this not serious. This is a serious proposal that focuses the ability for those districts that have the most urgent budget problems a way to help fix them. And let's not worry about whether it's new money or existing money. They can get the job done. And so I encourage members to support this bill.
Thank you, Senator Pratt. Any other comments from committee members? Senator Weber.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to comment, number one, I've never been on the school board, and I'm not on education this year, but I was the first 4 years that I was in the Senate. And I just want to comment that, we always talk about the money side of the equation, and I hope that as we go forward that we also talk about the state side of the equation, and that is exactly how much money do our school districts are our school districts forced to expend just to meet our rules and regulations and paperwork requirements and time in and time out. You talk about the staff requirements of the state to take care of these applications. Well, just think about the paperwork we force onto our school districts. And the number of new mandates that we have every year. I think, quite frankly, today we're talking about providing this money, and I'm all in favor of it. But I think that as we look at the budget issues that confront our school districts, we as state government, whether it's department or the legislature, need to also step up and recognize that we are part of that problem. And that as we go forward, I hope that we can make more progress in terms of relieving some of that type of burden on our school districts so that actually we release funds that they have then available for the other needs of their district. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Weber. And I think well-made comments. And we have certainly tried to be very mindful of not adding mandates onto our school districts and to give them flexibility with the funds that we provide to them. That's very important. As Senator Nelson noted, our schools are different, and they all have different priorities, different needs, and I think the less we do to constrain or tie the hands of local school boards, the better. Senator Nelson.
I think, and just some final comments to wrap up, and truly the members of this committee do support our schools, as do Minnesotans, and the comments reflect that. But let's just be clear that the bill before us today is just one part of what we are seeking to do in the Minnesota legislature to help keep our kids safer in schools. And just last night off the Senate floor, we passed $25 million in new money for safe schools to keep our schools safe. We also put a new $15 million in the TALES as well. And so when our kids and our schools are thinking about, and our parents, how their children are going to be, are they going to be in safer schools, they don't think about whether it was new money. They don't think about if it came out of this bill or that bill. They want to know that when they send their children or their grandchildren off to school, that they are in a facility that has been given the resources and the ability to make those schools safer. We have those options, and that is where we have been laser focused this year, is putting money to that priority of making our schools safer places for our kids. And we see it over and over how important that is. And so let us not forget the $25 million that was passed last night for our safer schools. There will be more to come in other bills. Today we have $50 million of new money sitting right here that we want to send to our schools to help them be safer places for our children and grandchildren. And I think we can do that. And it is always good. Many of us talk about how we are for local control, because local control is the best control, in that the local elected school board leaders know exactly what is needed and how and in the best way. And this simply provides flexibility. So I do not for 1 minute think that providing our school districts flexibility is something that we should be sniffing our noses at. It's a good thing to provide those local flexibility. So I am I encourage a strong yes vote as this goes forward, and we hope that we see great bipartisan support. It is time that we look bipartisanly at how we can protect our kids, and we must do that. And I think this is a great addition to our Safe Schools agenda that is rolling through this legislature. You're going to see it in many shapes and forms. This is one element, and we should act on it today.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Yes, and I will just briefly concur.
Now, I didn't want to go after either of your closing remarks, but
Senator Wieger.
Madam Chair, as I'll be brief, I've made the points. Thankfully, it's not midnight. It's only noon. I'm confident we'll reach bipartisan accord on the safe school revenue message. There's opportunity to do that this afternoon. The governor has asked, let's bundle the ideas on safe schools in one bill. It didn't have to be, as we had the 1,000-page bill last night with some of those messages, or partly in this and other measures. If we could send one bill, and we can have that bipartisan agreement that we're all looking for on that sweet spot, we will get there, I'm sure of it. We support students, we support local control, but as a reminder, I think the Minnesota School Boards Association told us that the earlier proposal had over 30 new mandates, and so just a reminder that, as some of us told each other, we all can do better on that accord. So let's get a bipartisan, maybe a single subject bill, or otherwise we have to continue to get this refined with the executive branch. I offer whatever assistance I might be, because just as much as you want this, so do I, and most importantly, the people that we serve.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. Any other comments? All right. Again, I would just align myself with comments that Senator Nelson made, and we are providing new money in this bill for schools. We are trying to meet the governor at least halfway, and I believe we have more than done that with this proposal, with new money, also with flexibility. And in talking with the governor yesterday, as part of his sort of the dollar figure in mind, he's also including the money that we have for safe schools with the grants and that in that was in the omnibus conference report that was adopted last night. That's actually about $28 million. I anticipate we're going to be taking up a bonding bill today in both the House and the Senate that has $25 million for schools, for safe schools. So that's well over $100 million by my quick back-of-the-envelope math. And that's before any flexibility provided with staff development, which we have done a number of times for districts. And again, as Senator Pratt noted, when it's 59 out of 343 roughly school districts that are having that crisis, I think that flexibility is appropriate. my assumption is districts who are not having a shortfall are probably not going to avail themselves of this because they don't need to. But I imagine those 59 districts, if this additional $60 a student isn't going to get them all the way where they need to be, or if the community education fund balance transfer that may or may not be approved doesn't get them where they need to be, maybe it's a wise decision on the part of their board to offer some flexibility to retain some important staff positions to get them through that rough patch. So, again, districts are in different places, and we are trying to be responsive to the different places that our districts are. So with that, Senator Nelson moves adoption of the conference committee report for House File 947, including all adopted amendments, with instructions to the reviser and nonpartisan staff to make any necessary and appropriate technical and conforming corrections. Any further discussion to the motion? Seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. The motion is approved, and the conference committee report is adopted. Thank you very much, committee members. I appreciate you being here early in advance of session on Sunday morning. If the conferees could stay for just a moment, I'd appreciate that. And with that, conference committee is adjourned.